For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Who wants cream? Nobody? Okay, no cream.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Guys, we've made a great effort so far. Let's just keep it up.
That's right. We can't have anyone freak out there, okay? We've got to keep our composure. We've got too far. There's too much to lose. We've got to keep our composure.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
A lot of pressure. You gotta rise above it. Mm-hmm. You gotta harness in the good energy, block out the bad. Harness, energy, block, bad. Feel the flow, happy. Feel it. It's circular.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Hey, guys. Whoa, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2. And, of course, YouTube. Good morning, YouTube. Be on alert for something that is back in our lives during Ducks football season. A big secret, if you will.
What was the score? I don't know.
I know the score. It's 24-14.
Oh, that's right. It's 24-14. Okay,
gotcha. What are you talking about here? Gotcha. If you missed any of the first hour, if you miss any of the hours and you just catch the show late, you listen to the podcast, we understand. We basically are a podcast for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You can always catch it at 1080thefan.com or download it anywhere you get your podcast. A lot of college football talk in hour one, including Dirt saying he had a nightmare this weekend.
Yeah, I did.
And we'll get to that nightmare here in just a second. We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the program. We will talk about my Beavs pulling away and stomping Idaho State in the second half of that game, leaving me with a heart attack in the first half.
Suck it, Bengals.
Weird name, Idaho State.
Very weird name.
Bengals?
Vandals fits. I don't even know what is a Vandal. I don't know. Do we know what a Vandal is?
But it sounds right.
Idaho Vandals. Idaho State Bengals?
Yeah.
The Bengals?
How about the Bungles?
I mean, you're in Idaho.
The Bungles.
What are we doing here? You know, come on.
The potato crates.
Yeah.
We apologize to Idaho in the first hour, the state collectively. We overlooked week one, which was a mistake on both our ends. But we will get to the Beavs as well. We got a lot of coaches' audio and audio in general to get to from the weekend of college football.
Yeah, there was one fan who had a meltdown in front of a Denny's this weekend that we need to play that sound. And we will play that for you in about an hour.
We will play it. I like it. I just also. So how much do these people practice doing these before they do them?
Yeah, or is it just off the cuff? Because I'm always impressed if you can pull it off the cuff.
It's
a hell of a rant.
Also, how weird do these people look practicing this in front of a Denny's?
Yeah. Why did we lose? Why is that guy yelling at himself over there, man?
Start again.
How many things do you actually question in front of a Denny's?
I don't. Well. I'm not anti-Denny's here. I'm a breakfast guy.
You're pro-Denny's.
You're starving from whatever. Kept you up till 3 a.m.
Good spot to go
the
to.
The Grand Slam that you could do worse.
Meat Lover's Skillet. You ever
there
had
you
one
go.
Of those?
Little moons over my hammy.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, moving my hammy right now.
I was that guy in front of like a burrito boy at halftime at Eugene. What is happening right now?
Yeah. Yelling at my establishments phone. Where if you see something odd, you question it. I don't think in Denny's parking lot I'm questioning too many things.
I don't think so.
Well, I did see something odd. It was Saturday where Oregon played Idaho. Speaking of odd, and the Ducks offensive line could not move the defensive front of Idaho.
Not good, Bob.
found themselves in a dogfight late into the fourth quarter. It's one thing to say maybe second quarter. Okay, slow start. I say Ohio State was slow this weekend.
Yeah, their score was 17-6 at the half against Akron.
Their passing game looked questionable at best. Like, there's a lot of takeaways from week one. Whether it's rust or worry, I don't know where fans for different programs lie. I would say locally, Duck fan is somewhere between panicking and worried, and they're just in between that space. They get a late touchdown, and they end up separating themselves. They get the win.
Easy win, comfortable.
And they knock Idaho's quarterback out for the next few weeks because he broke his collarbone, Jack Lane. But Idaho, giving a scare into the Ducks, who were 40-plus point favorites. I did not see that coming.
Look, I'm just glad it only took 1 week, and now I can get back to the nobody's giving us a chance, man. Everybody's counting us out. We barely beat Idaho. Where are all those national championship picks going to go after 1 week of the season?
You're ranked number three, according to Greg McMurphy.
Wait until the AP poll comes out later, because they will tumble in the AP poll, and rightfully so. We usually will do the dirty poll on Tuesdays, but we have too much to get to today, so I'll hold the dirty poll for tomorrow.
It's a weird Tuesday-Monday show.
It's a very weird, we got too much, and there's not enough time to get to all of it. I would label the feeling right now as it's like there's a massive panic button that you could press. The panic button is surrounded by glass, and we have broken the glass. Like the glass, we took a crowbar, glass has been shattered, and now the button is ready to be pressed at any
really?
Moment. Like the hand is on top, it's just hovering. You know, it's like
a little smoke, and we're breaking the glass.
We're playing Family Feud. Okay. The hand's just hovering over the button. I know the answer, and I'm waiting to see what happens this weekend against Boise State. My mind is a jumbled mess right now, buddy. It's a jumbled mess. They barely beat Idaho. If anybody else barely beats, like if Ohio State beat Akron this weekend, 24-14,
if that was the same game,
I would be making so much fun of them today. At least we're not the Huskies. We don't actually lose to FCS teams, so we still have that going for us. We just struggle with them from time to time.
Hey, don't bet on the
forget.
Huskies.
People don't forget.
They took care of their business this weekend.
That was a little bit of a dogfight in the first half, too. Yeah. But that, to your point, if you tell me that score's 14-0 at the half, like, all right, I'm doing a bit of a, that's weird. But what do I assume is going to happen in the second half? The same thing that happens in almost all of these games, that you have the size, strength, depth that the other programs don't. You run away with it in the second half, run the ball a ton, and the final score is 42-6, and you're like, all right, whatever. When that game was 14-0 at the half, that's exactly how I thought the second half was going to go. And then you come out and you basically go 3-and-out on your first drive. Then you have these weird fourth down calls where you're faking punts, and then your fullback is tripping up your pulling guard, and you can't pick up a first down. Yeah. Like, what the hell is that? I'm stuck somewhere between the legitimate worry about an issue that I have brought up for weeks. We literally did a segment a week ago in which I asked the question on our show, should I be concerned about Oregon's offensive line? They refuse to name a starting center, and their guard who they brought in to plug that big hole is not going to be playing. Now, it sounds like he might be back this week against Boise, so that's a good place to start at least in improving. But I have been raising this concern. We literally did go look at the podcast from last Tuesday. I did this segment. I'm a little concerned about Oregon's offensive line. Did I think it was going to rear its ugly head in week one against the mighty Vandals of Idaho? No, not in a million years did I see that coming. So I think there's a balance of, if you're struggling to move the line of scrimmage against Idaho, Bedford maybe improves it slightly, but that's an issue, dude. And if that's an issue, it's going to be a glaring problem for them all season. While also, I think the more optimistic take is that this is a team with, one, a lot of new faces, and two, there's a reason that the phrase rat poison is out there. Like, they have been told all offseason, you're going to win a national championship, you're one of the best programs. Dan Lanning has been more talked about arguably than any other coach in the sport this offseason. Like, they have had a spotlight on them and have had smoke blown up their butt like they have never had before.
Yeah.
And I think the ultimate optimistic take is that if Oregon ends up being the team that many people thought they could be at the start of the year, this could serve as you dumbass. You can't just show up and beat everybody just by showing up and playing the game. You got to bring it, and we'll see if they do it this Saturday.
Well, but also the coach brought on some of that smoke.
Oh, he definitely did.
You show up to Big Ten Media Day, and you talk about we're the team out west, and we're this, and we're that, and you got a floating duck in a river. Like, those, it's not that Oregon didn't bring any of that onto themselves. They certainly know how to market their program and get people to talk about them. And so it's kind of this weird combination where I know you, who have been rooting for this team for a very long time, there's a little bit of uncomfortableness when it's like, hey, Oregon's the best team, and you're like, oh, I mean, you know, can we but also they kind of throw it out there in people's
faces.
You know, Big Ten fans were probably taking a lot of delight in watching them struggle against Idaho.
Yeah,
I'm not versed enough to really explain what I saw. I just tell you, watching it didn't make any sense to my brain.
No.
The talent gap between what that offensive line is, whether they're new or not, and Idaho, it should not have been what it was.
No.
And now I know that, you know, sack yardage and all that's accumulated into this, but a 2.9 yard average is... it's pretty awful.
Jordan James had a good game.
Jordan James was their thing. And whenever Noah Whittington got in, for some reason, it just crumbled for him. And so we'll see how much do they rely on Jordan more versus splitting those reps up the way they did this week. The offensive line health is obvious concern. Also, I'm not... this is not him. This was an offensive line problem. Their defense was just fine. Mm-hmm. They got tricked on one trick play.
Yep.
Didn't execute it properly, and they got burned for it. Largely, their defense was not an issue for them.
And the offense kept handing them short fields because they kept failing fourth downs in the third quarter.
Yeah, and that was that was the other thing, was a little bit of a wonky play calling thing. The offensive line clearly had their problems. His numbers don't show it per se, mm-hmm. but there is a different vibe with Gabriel than there was Nick's. And Nick's got this dinking and the dunking label last year, and it became like an argument with people. A lot of dinking and dunking.
Now, oh, a ton.
I think some of that comes from not having a run game, so it's like, we got to get 4 yards here, 3 yards here, help ourselves for second and mid or whatever. But I'm kind of curious to see going forward, when your explosive plays are taking away, is this a passing attack if your run game doesn't get a whole lot better? And that's a big if. Is that something that's going to beat elite teams, good teams that are bordering on elite, the Michigans of the world, where I don't know where to place them yet? That's what I'm wondering. And he's shorter. So it's like, it feels like he's holding on to the ball a little bit longer. It's just 1 week, but the offensive line having their problems paired with what I saw and his numbers, they look good on paper. It's interesting going forward, evaluating and talking about Oregon going into Boise State.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's funny, in both reactions. One, I don't know if there's ever been a game that was one that felt more like a loss than this weekend. Like, right. I don't know if I've ever seen a game where they won the game, but it feels like a loss. We're in mourning today. Somebody passed away this weekend. That's the feeling.
Let me interrupt you quickly, because I watched Dan Lanning's post game, and it was short, and nothing wanted to be answered by him.
Oh, he was not in a good mood.
The only thing I had taken away was he was asked about the post-game message to his team, and this was his response.
Coach, I'm just wondering, what did you tell the team in the locker room after the win?
Well, that's for the team. That's for the team in the locker room. If we wanted you guys there, we would have everybody else in there. There's areas for improvement for us right now. You know, you celebrate wins in our program when that happens, but there's some areas for improvement.
And his face looked like, I have the power of 1,000 suns right now. I'm pissed.
I'm going to go wring somebody's neck, dude. He was not happy after that.
Imagine that post-game talk was not fun.
And rightfully so. But it felt like it was a win that felt like a loss. And I felt like Gabriel was somewhat similar, where his numbers, if you didn't watch the game, you look at the box score, he's 41 of 49, 380 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. That if you thought that was an elite performance, he didn't really watch the game. Now, it wasn't his fault. Their offensive line was the primary concern. He was sacked a couple of times. One of them a strip sack. Like, you look at the end of that first half. They had a play on the, they were up 7-0 at the time. They had a play to get all the way down to the 10, like a 20-yard completion, get down to the 10-yard line, first and goal from the 10.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the second quarter, I believe, or late in the first quarter. And instead of that completion standing and having a first and 10 at the 10, first and goal at the 10, they called Johnny Cornelius for a formation issue because he was lined up too far off the line of scrimmage at right tackle. I've never seen that called in my years of watching college football. So you went from first and 10 from the 10 to first and 15. Then they called a tunnel screen that lost 6 yards. And you just went from an easy touchdown drive to all of a sudden it was second and 23 from like the 38-yard line. And then you have to settle for a field goal.
Yeah.
And then you get down there again. Okay, it's 14-0. You score on your next drive. The next drive before half, they're driving out. First and 10 from the 22-yard line. They're going in to score to make it 21-0. All right, it's not great. You should be up by more than that, but 21-0 at the half's nothing to, you know, that's okay. It's serviceable.
You're breathing a sigh. You're breathing like, okay, like, now right, we blow them out.
It'll be here okay. We'll get the ball to start the second half. Yeah. And Dylan Gabriel has a blindside sack, and he fumbles the ball, and you turn it over. And it's like, that game was legitimately 3 plays away from being 28-0 at the half, and it's funny how different we would be talking about it, although the offensive line would still be the primary concern. Dylan Gabriel... It was a ton of underneath stuff. I don't know how much of that is just what he's comfortable with at this point, how much of that is what they were calling. They really only took one deep shot in the game, and it happened on the first drive of the game. They took a deep shot to Evan Stewart. He overthrew him by about a half a yard, and he almost caught it in the end zone. They still scored on that drive. But outside of that, he had one corner out. He hit Kyle Casper on, who made a nice catch on a third down. That was about a 20-yard completion, but There was nothing else that was even attempted that was over.
It's just
50. It was just slant, hitch, out, slant, hitch, swing pass, or here, dump it down to my safety valve, you know, the back, leaving the backfield. Nothing downfield. And so, again, it's hard to get a read in week one. How much of that is what is going to be Gabriel, what he does all year? How much of that is Will Stein saying, dude, we're playing Idaho. We're not taking a bunch of shots down the field. It's just really hard to get a read because you did not. Watching that game, it was hard to compute with your brain what your eyes were seeing.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. More on this, Dan Lanning talking about the offensive line and something you brought up there on the explosive play thing. So we'll have a little bit more on this here from Dan Lanning coming up next. Your thoughts are welcome at the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. How did you feel about what you saw from the Oregon Ducks in week one against Idaho? We'll talk more about it next on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
All right, welcome back in. Jerry Allen on the call there, talking Oregon barely beating Idaho this weekend in Eugene. We'll get to some Dan Lanning audio. Should be noted, their week two opponent is the Boise State Broncos.
Bring it on, State of Idaho. We're not scared of you.
Ofer in Boise State matchups, but interesting note from the Boise State game, in case you didn't see it, they beat Georgia Southern, the Fighting Clay Heltons.
Mm-hmm.
56-45.
How about that for a shootout?
And Georgia Southern ran for 139 yards with a 4.0 average against Boise State.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
But maybe Georgia Southern's
really good?
Better than Idaho. Maybe. So that's true. That you could be looped. You could be screwed there. I don't know. Look, it's interesting, man. I think when you come in with a lot of hype and a lot of excitement about a season, I thought you could see it from Dan Lanning's reactions in the moment on the sideline and then in the postgame of just, all right, not quite what I expected from this unit, given the amount of talk we've had about this team.
It was embarrassing, man. You were in a talk fight with Idaho in the fourth. It's embarrassing. That's the only way to label it. It's inexcusable. It's embarrassing. There's no, there's zero sugarcoating a positive spin that could go on a game like that, man. I was looking up at the Jumbotron late in the second quarter. I think the game was 14-0 at the time. It was maybe right after the Gabriel fumble. And looking up, and it's like 14-0, and the total yardage was like Oregon 290 to Idaho's 63. And they had like two total first downs at that point. And I just am like trying to wrap my head around, like, how is this what is going on? How is this 14-0? This doesn't make any sense. And you look at it even in the end, like, Oregon outgained them by nearly 300 yards of total offense. Idaho was like 2-12 on third down. Like, every metric other than the ability to run the football on yards per carry pointed to this is a bloodbath.
Yes.
And it wasn't because you made so many incredibly stupid, boneheaded mistakes. And I think that was the one area outside of offensive line play that you hope you can just chalk up to a week one thing and it gets cleaned up. But the procedural penalties, the not lining up correctly, the strip sack fumble on a first down, that if Gabriel just holds onto that ball, maybe you still score on that drive. He just gets sacked. That was on first down. Now it's second and 17. Maybe you still score and it's 21-0. Like, they did so many things to hurt themselves. And it felt like as the game went on, they understood of the amount of pressure that was building of like, why aren't we executing? Why can't we do this? Why can't we run the ball? And the pressure built. They got tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter as the game went on, including their coach, who was going for it on all sorts of crazy fourth downs in his own territory because they were only up 14-0 on Idaho.
Well, and you were in the building, so you'd be better versed on describing it. But I can tell you, just watching through the television, when they scored on the trick play to cut it within 14-7.
After the second fourth down failure.
It was a little bit of like,
what?
Oh, and I saw multiple people pointing this out on social media of just like the fact that Duck fan even thought they'd be in their seat at this point in the fourth quarter was probably wild of like, no, I thought I'd be in a car trying to get out of here going
home. Let's beat the Corvallis traffic home because their game started an hour earlier. Let's hit the road.
And so it just, you know, when you get in that spot, the players can sometimes feel that energy and it's like, oh my God, is Idaho going to do this? A couple thoughts of the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. The O-line looks shook. Bedford should be back, which will help everyone get back to their position. Without a trick play, Oregon holds Idaho to one score. If Oregon doesn't look good against Boise State, and definitely Oregon State, I'm not reading what you wrote there, it might be time to get worried. Another one. All the other top-ranked teams destroyed their FCS opponents 51-0, 49-0, 76-0. Oregon was embarrassing. Barely eked out a win. They drank their own Kool-Aid for sure. And I highlight the opponent because defensively, we're not talking anything about Oregon. Oregon was fine defensively.
No, yeah, they were good.
Boise State is a running team, okay? They got Ashton Gentry, and that kid went absolutely berserk. He had 6 touchdowns this past week. He had 13.4 average. They are a running team.
Yeah.
Their quarterback threw for 280 and a touchdown, which is fine, but they are going to beat Oregon by running the football. And so you're not as concerned about that side for Oregon. It's going to be, you couldn't push Idaho around.
Yeah, can you push anybody else
around? Can you push Boise State around? And can you not make mistakes and get in your own way?
Yeah.
And that was the big thing. And so I certainly understand the thinking of, go look at the other top-ranked teams and what they did against FCS opponents. I'm sorry, no disrespect. I don't care how good Idaho's been the last couple of years with Eck.
No.
This is not close in talent. So it is concerning that Oregon came out and played this way against that opponent.
It unquestionably is. Any Oregon fan who says it's not concerning is lying to themselves at this point. It's amazing to say it, but 5 days ago, you kind of felt like, all right, opening first few weeks of the schedule, you're not going to really learn much about the Oregon team.
We poo-pooed this game.
Idaho, Boise State, then you get Oregon State, and then you get UCLA or Michigan State. Like, all right, and then Ohio State comes to town. That's when we find out who Oregon is. There is an exponentially higher amount of interest in the Oregon-Boise State game now than there was 5 days ago. If Oregon comes out, wins that game, offensive line looks fine, Bedford's back, they can run the football, they win the game by 21 and cover the spread, you're going to say, okay, this is a good team. They just had, for whatever reason, a weird hiccup. If these things linger, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's what's the highest DEFCON you can go to? That's where you're at. If your offensive line again struggles to create push, Georgia Southern ran the ball pretty efficiently, as we pointed out with the numbers from their game against Boise this weekend. Like, there's no excuse to have the same problems linger from week one to week two. It's one of the main calling cards under Lanning, I will say, when they've had these weird clunker games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think of the Texas Tech game in week two. They probably should have lost that game early in the season last year. And it's like, they eke it out late. You get the pick six, you seal it. And then they didn't have a close game until, other than the two Washington games, the rest of the year. That was it. They blew everybody out by an average margin of almost 30 points per game. So they've had their kind of close calls and they've been able to bounce back from them. And you're going to find out a ton about this football team in week two, man.
My only rebuttal is like, yeah, you're right. But that's Texas Tech. This is Idaho.
This is Idaho at home.
This is a huge opportunity for them because Boise's not going to come over as a pushover. They're coming in. They're feeling confident about themselves. They're running attack. And You know, you watch the film, their defensive line probably feels great right now. Like, if Idaho can do that, why can't we do that? A couple more thoughts, and then I want to play some landing audio. Oregon took the day off. They sleptwalked through their victory. It happens to young men. Deal says, I think I just yelled, it's Idaho! at one point, which is a very fair thing to be yelling.
It's definitely yelled.
Somebody else says, I left the game at the end of the third because I told the wife and kids I'd be home earlier. Never thought I'd be stressed listening to the fourth quarter on the drive home.
That's one of those things, if you lose, I don't want to be there to witness that. If you like, I've been getting out either way. I don't want to see the fourth quarter, and if we lose, I don't want to be the witness to this.
Here's a couple thoughts. Dan Lanning on his Monday presser talked about the offensive line. So here's what his film session revealed about his offensive line's play.
You're winning in a lot of categories. The categories we really didn't win on were situational football and the way we ran the ball, right? So we had the ball twice before 2 minute, before half. We didn't score. Had an opportunity to kick, didn't make the kick. Didn't score in the middle eight. Generally that's been something that we've done, well. So that offensively, defensively gave us some explosive plays, even on limited possessions. But I mean, we had 87 snaps, they had 48 snaps, right? So you had the ball a lot more, but we weren't creating the explosives that turn into, positives. So finding ways to do that. A lot of that comes with, effort to the ball, finishing, proper mechanics, you look at it and you study those pieces. How do we create those things? And then you attack it and you build your practice plan around that as well. A lot of the things we saw that were places for us to improve, those are exact things that we worked on today.
And it's I just think, one, that's very fair. Two, week ones can be weird for a lot of programs. It took Michigan till deep into the fourth with Fresno State to separate and win by 20.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other side of that coin, and this is what's fun about this sport and why I think I love it so much, is our overreactions or reactions to these. The other side is... that was still Idaho, and I don't know if I'm encouraged or where I'm at, if I'm a fan of Oregon, hearing my coach basically talk about the adjustments they still need to make on the offensive line after playing Idaho.
After week one against an FCS opponent.
Yes.
That's an incredibly alarming thing. And boy, oh boy, buddy, you better clean that stuff up week two, man. You better. We are in a glass case of emotions right now.
Dirt might be pressing a panic button.
It's hands right there. It's hovering.
It's shaking right
over
it.
It's hovering right over that button, and I am ready to mash, depending on how that first quarter goes.
We'll get back into Oregon coming up in the final hour. Bill Orem of the Oregonian is going to join us at 8:15. He wrote about the Ducks and the Beavs week one games. And speaking of my Beavs, we'll pause on the Ducks, get back into that. Let's talk about Oregon State. Talk about panic buttons. I was ready to hit a panic button in the first quarter and a half of that first half. I was sitting there going, oh, I've seen this story before. And then they settled things. Let's talk about Oregon State's 1-0 start to their season. An important update with their scheduling going forward as well. So we'll talk a little Beavs coming up next on The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Shout out to John, who won the Game Day Secret Score. Where was John from? Did he give us a town, an area, a location?
I did not retrieve that bit of information.
Well, good for you, John.
John from the radio universe.
John from the world.
Yeah.
Man of the people.
I'm John from the world.
From the world. 83.7 was your secret score number. That was Dylan Gabriel's completion percentage this weekend. And make sure you listen to the post-game show every Saturday night, sometimes Friday nights, and you have a chance to win the secret score on
sometimes
our show.
Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, and you'll have a chance usually on Mondays, but no show yesterday, so we did it this week on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I am close. My hand is hovering over the Oregon panic button. It's right there. I'm ready to strike it any moment. Bad first quarter. We're mashing that thing like crazy Saturday night.
Yeah.
Beaver fan chiming in at the Vancouver Ford text line, trying to one-up me in my panic. How dare you? I am mashing the panic button. One-dimensional offense, very limited quarterback play. That first half felt like they thought they could just line up and beat Idaho State.
Yeah.
They couldn't. It's alarming. They had to start opening up the offense a lot more than I think they wanted to or thought they would need to against that level of opponent. I obviously was down at the game. This is your ultimate sign of karma. I was in Eugene talking to an Oregon staffer on the sideline. This was in the first quarter when Oregon had scored on their opening drive, 7-0, and it's like, oh, here we go. Okay, Idaho can't get a first down. It's going to be a bloodbath. Everybody's leaving at the end of the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That clearly did not end up happening. And I remember joking with somebody on the sideline because I was just checking my score, seeing what's going on. All right, this is... And at that time, they were losing 9-7. And I made a joke to a staffer down, look at that, Oregon State's loser to an FCS team. And then just ultimate karma right back in my face. But pull away late. The Beavs get the win. 1-0. 38-15 was the final.
Yeah.
My Beaver brethren, how do we feel?
Well, first of all, let's go back to our Pac-12, our big PP.
Our
that
big
we're
PP
doing
picks.
Every week.
Yeah.
who covered? Washington State?
Washington State and Washington,
did
I believe,
Washington
covered.
Cover?
I think Washington
Washington
covered.
Was a 28 point, 27.5, and they won by 32.
Yeah, it was right? 38.
So the Washington schools handled business.
Yeah.
Oregon schools, not handling
business.
Not
so much.
The Beavs could have there at the end if they wanted to.
Maybe. I just think that score is pretty lined up with what the game was.
Yeah.
Like, dead right there. I agree with some of that listener's point. 9-7, I'm watching this. They've snapped a punt out of the end zone.
Yeah. For a safety.
They cannot throw the football to save anything. Jam Griffin fumbles on what seems to
opening
be an opening
drive, the
drive after they stop Idaho State. And, like, I'm just thinking, oh, my God, I've seen this story in Corvallis before. I've lived this multiple
just
times.
Just settle down.
But there is a little truth to, they didn't open it up so much, by the way. They had the one long pass play to David Wells Jr.
It's a beautiful throw.
McCoy was 9 of 10 for 114. They didn't really open. They just ran it, and they kept running it and running it and running it, and so Hankerson and Griffin had themselves a day.
I think they had two touchdown drives where they only called run plays.
But they were also incredibly lucky to start the game. Idaho State's first starting quarterback, they switched like multiple times. They had four dudes play.
It made no sense.
He missed multiple throws that would have probably been touchdown passes for Idaho State early. Now, they still end up going up 9-7. I was a little worried at halftime. I'm not going to lie to you. And I think anybody pretending that they weren't, I think it's ridiculous. Idaho State's an FCS team. Yes, you are kind of in this weird pseudo Mountain West thing, but you should still be separated pretty decently from them. And they were in a struggle bus. Thankfully, though, their defense locked down in the second half. They established their physicality up on the front with their run game, and they pulled away. And that third quarter separation paired with getting that final touchdown in the fourth quarter, you breathe a sigh of relief. A tale of two halves, if you will. But yeah, the first half, I was definitely a little concerned of, they're giving up big chunk plays through the air. Secondary's kind of getting, you know, thrown on a little bit here. They're moving the ball all right, defense or offensively, Idaho State was on the ground. I was a little worried in the first half, but the second half, they settled in and they handled their business.
Yeah, the Idaho State quarterback rotation made no sense. I thought that Tracy guy was playing pretty well. I was going back and watching it when I got home, and I ended up finishing it.
Yeah, I thought
on
he
Sunday.
Was better than Cook. I didn't understand
why
that.
Would we sit him? Yeah. And then that made no sense. I thought he had finally gotten into a rhythm. He had the touchdown pass. Like, they had a little bit of momentum towards the end of the first half, and then they sat him. And the other guy really struggled. To your point earlier in the game, he did have a dude wide open on kind of a broken play that he just overshot by 2 or 3 yards that could have easily been an early touchdown for Idaho State. I just, you know, it's hard to be too reactionary to week one games when there's so much newness. New staff. I know Bray was there last year, but new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new play callers, new quarterback, new stars here, new running backs, new linemen, new everything. So it's just hard to come out in week one and be like, why weren't you perfect? Why didn't you do this? Because I do think there was a bit of a, let's feel our way through this game. We know we're going to be able to run the football. I think that's the only criticism that I have. But again, I don't know how much of that is by design. They just didn't really even try to do a lot in the passing game. And as the season goes on in some of your tougher matchups, you will have to be multidimensional offensively. I did really like the touchdown pass that McCoy threw. That was a beautiful ball. He had a couple other deep shots that he underthrew a little bit. One of them drew a pass interference. I also thought you saw kind of the up and down roller coaster that you're going to ride with him. He had a stretch, I want to say it was in the second quarter, back-to-back plays where the first one was like a design quarterback run. I can't remember if it was zone read or like a quarterback power, but he mastered circle twice, had two spins, picks up like 7 more yards, and you're like, ooh, there's the quarterback run game.
Well, that
that's
was
gonna
Jabari.
Be effective.
The
very next play, he's rolling out on a play action pass, and he doesn't seemingly see a guy that's 2 feet in front of his face, and he just takes a sack. And it's like, there's promise there and potential, but you're gonna have to take your lumps. Mm-hmm. I thought your running back tandem looked really good. Again, it's Idaho State, but outside of the fumbles for Jam Griffin, both of them ran the ball really hard. Your pressure rate picked up in the second half. That was a little non-existent early in the game. But I just, you know, for a lot of these teams in week one, when there's so many new faces and new things, you won the game by 23 points. I understand Oregon State fan wants to see more that's texting in saying they're panicking. But we're going to find out a lot about this team in the next 3 weeks. Similar to what we just said with Oregon. San Diego State, tougher test on the road this week. They're a slight favorite.
Yep.
Then you get the Civil War. Then you get Purdue. Like, next 3 weeks will tell us a lot. They survived. They didn't blow a historic loss to Idaho State. They did exactly what they needed to
do. Well, it'd be interesting to see going forward, too, because the other part of Oregon State now panicking. I'm not in panic mode for Oregon State, maybe the way you are right now with Oregon because of where they're at and who they play and all that. But I'm interested to see how they fare against the schedule, because Purdue and Oregon, we know Oregon talent-wise is substantially ahead of them, and Purdue, I think on paper, should be ahead of them from a talent gap standpoint, given what they lost in the portal. But the rest of that, like San Diego State won this weekend against a team I'd never heard of. You talk about Lindenwood. Texas A&M Commerce.
Never heard of it.
Had never heard of them.
Never heard of it.
But their running back, Marquez Cooper, he ran for 220 plus yards. So this is going to be a real ground attack by San Diego State. And I liked what I saw defensively from Oregon State in the second half. But I'm not going to lie. I was a little concerned with the first, despite it just being a 9 points. I thought there was a lot more room for yardage and points for Idaho State, given it every time I watched a receiver catch it, they either caught a difficult pass or there was like 6 yard separation. And so that left me somewhat concerned of the secondary for Oregon State. But again, first game, 100 degrees outside for when these teams are playing, by the way.
Trent Bray, an absolute psycho, dude, in long sleeve black T-shirt, just facing the sun.
He looked like he was sunburned before the game had started.
His face was a strawberry by the end of the game, man.
I respect the tan.
Get this guy a bucket hat or something.
It's just, it's tougher, I think, to pin down where you should be panic-wise or whatever you want to describe it with Oregon State, given so much newness and then what their schedule is. Oregon doesn't have the wiggle room that Oregon State might have this year, where they can not have such a good passing attack, but grind out a good win against, I don't know, fill in the blank, Nevada or whatever. Oregon plays that way against Ohio State, they're going to lose. Mm-hmm. And it's not really going to be much of a contest. And so I think that's the difference here of what we're talking about between panicking or just being a little concerned about some things because of their strength of schedule. But they're going to have a good test this week and go down to San Diego State, given what I saw from a little bit of the Aztecs Lions matchup this
week. I mean, Texas A&M Commerce had a 6-3 lead on San Diego State at halftime.
Exactly.
In their stadium. They scored
3 points.
It was the
third quarters and the fourth quarter.
They put 42 up on the board in the second half. So they pulled away slightly. So this isn't a game that you can't win by any stretch of the imagination. It's just a more formidable test, I would think, than Idaho State, and you're going on the road. And so you get off to a 2-0 start. You do want to see more from the passing game. Want to see those pressure rates pick up a little bit earlier, and they are going to be without a starting linebacker who got called for targeting. Chisholm, I believe, got a targeting call in the second half of that game, and he's going to be out the first
half. So my only other concern, aside from maybe some defensive questions, is the quarterback spot. And we talked about this when they named McCoy.
Do we like playing both guys?
Well, I certainly understand why you play both guys in that game. Jabari didn't really do anything for me to like, oh, he's got to be the starter. And then McCoy had the deep pass to Wells. But I'm still like, okay, when you play a team and they take the run game away, what are you?
That's going to be the game plan. Nine in the box, exactly. Good luck running the ball.
And that's where I'm at, is like, I don't really know where my confidence is on McCoy, and I know it's not going to be particularly high for Johnson, given he has almost no experience playing.
How you feeling, Beaver fans? Vancouver 4 text line, 503-864-6326. You can also fire them away at the YouTube chat, which is as lively as it's always been today. It's great to have football back in our lives. We're all yelling at each other, rooting against each other's teams. I love it, dude. It's so good to have it back. We'll read some of your thoughts on Oregon State, and then speaking of quarterback play, one team in the Northwest had very good quarterback play this weekend. Did it open our eyes at all?
My God.
Considering the opponent, Jonah Coleman ran wild. We'll get to that. And Sprague teased earlier a scheduling update on the future for Oregon State and Washington State. What do we make of this move? All of that is next on 1080 The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
All right, Crunch Time, as always, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. Bill Orem coming up at 8:15. I have some fun with college football audio that I would like to enjoy together as a threesome coming up at the top of the hour.
Are we mail sacking? We didn't talk about this.
I don't think we're going to mail sack today. I don't have enough time for the mail sack. When am I mail sacking today? I'm in football mode right now, buddy. All right? Football only. Wow. It's how we roll around
here. Sack in the sack.
A couple very quick things that we don't need to linger on.
Yeah.
I went to the Climate Pledge Arena Friday night for a WNBA action.
Yes, reaction, live updates. What do we feel?
Well, watching Sabrina make a shot from the floor was crazy insane because I was right behind that basket. And Climate Pledge is a 10 out of 10, and I'm telling you, when they get the Sonics back, go to a game.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Probably a little bit. Is it cheaper to get into a WNBA game or a Kraken game right now? I mean, the Kraken games are
WNBA for sure.
Yeah. Kraken's insane.
What do we think when the Sonics come back? What's the cheaper ticket? New Sonics or
WNBA.
Kraken?
Oh.
No, it'll be Kraken because it's the same arena, but in an ice rink, you lose all those lower seats.
So there's more seats available for basketball.
So the upper deck, the upper deck for Sonics will be cheaper than the upper deck for Kraken.
I went to Key Arena and I was like,
dude,
I don't recognize
Key Arena
this place.
Sucked, man.
Well, this one doesn't.
Yeah.
This one doesn't whatsoever.
It's such a great facility.
It's amazing. It doesn't even feel like an arena when you walk in and then you're just like, boom, arena. And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
They did a great job with it.
Did you like the little stroll through grab and go concession?
Did
you go to one of those?
I didn't enjoy the prices, but I enjoyed the grab and go.
You gotta have the grab and go, man.
I love a good grab and go.
Well, we're also getting a WNBA team. That's on the notes for at some point this week, but you know, we just don't have enough time today.
Yeah.
Want to read a couple thoughts here. Beaver fans chiming in, and we got a massive mixed bag going on here.
Okay. Panic and not panic?
The Idaho State team, they won 3 games last year. It should have been an ass-kicking from start to finish. Another one. I'm sorry. Beaver fans overreacting need to shut up. My goodness, they ran for 350 yards. Idaho State stayed in 3 high safety look the entire game. Gundy did what Gundy was supposed to do, ran them out of that look, and they never changed it. Multiple PFF offensive guys ranking high. You take that one fumble away at the 5-yard line and the stupid muff punt, and we're looking at a game completely different. And then back to the other side. Definitely worried myself a bit at the end of the first half. By the end of the game, it felt like the old Stanford teams, where a 2-touchdown win was a 4-touchdown win by anybody else. Just because the O-line and the run game was just brutalizing the other team.
Yeah.
And then one more here. And you texted about this. So I was not watching live, obviously. I reacted to most of this later because I started watching it Saturday night and then finished it on Sunday.
Sure.
I went to the OSU game, and what was more disappointing than their play was the attendance and the energy at Reser. Felt like a scrimmage atmosphere. I get it's an FCS opponent, but the energy was weird by halftime. It was a ghost town. I will make note of that for Eugene, at least. I have probably been to 16 opening games in my life now. We've been doing this for 7 years as the broadcast partner, and then time as a student, time as a kid. There has never been an energy like that, which was ironic because they've never played an FCS team that bad. It felt like a big game atmosphere. That place was sold out. It was standing room only. A little bit of a different look in Corvallis this weekend.
Yeah,
I'm not blaming anybody for not wanting to go to that game. It was 1,000 degrees on the field, but there were a lot of empty seats.
The picture I sent you, I got from Twitter, and I think it was a little before kick.
Yeah, it filled up a little bit more than that.
It filled up more than the photo I sent you guys. I also was 100 degrees, and I've been in that stadium when the sun's out, and there's not really any shade. I don't know, man. The energy did feel weird watching through TV. So I'm not going to criticize because I wasn't there in person, but watching on TV, I couldn't tell how much of that was the fans and the noise or the CW, because that was the other weird thing, was listening to Tom Brenneman call this game.
Yeah, did we like Tom Brenneman on the call? It took me a while to get used to it watching
He's got great pipes. It just felt very weird watching this game on the CW. Yeah. Now, you couldn't watch the Oregon game here on Comcast. You couldn't watch SEC Big Ten games in other areas with
DirecTV
other providers.
DirecTV lost ESPN, man. If you have DirecTV, you can't get ESPN and ABC anymore.
It was a bad weekend for the satellite cord people, but it was weirdly bizarre watching it through the CW. And I couldn't tell how much of that was atmosphere versus the CW.
I also wondered, too, because at moments they showed the crowd. I did make note of it because I left super early Saturday thinking Oregon State game, Oregon game, like this is going to be a madhouse on I-5. It eventually was, but the time I went, I flew, and I was like, I didn't see that many fans of really either team. I was wondering what the atmospheres were going to look like. I also wonder for fans that went to that game, maybe there were more that just didn't want to sit out in the sun the entire time, and you have all these nice new concourse. Like, how many people were just walking around the concourse to stay out of the sun and go watch it on a TV and grab a beer?
Yeah.
Instead of sitting there and melting when it's not, like, it was hotter than hell down in Eugene Saturday, and Corvallis I know was the same.
I think the thing for Oregon State is I think really it's kind of for both, and if you would have told you and I this on Friday's show, we certainly wouldn't have, we would have been like, yeah, right. I think we really get a more clear definition of some things that we're both circling on these programs this weekend. Oregon State's quarterback questions, I still think they're massive. I also agree with some of the points there of they ran the ball. They didn't really need to do anything else, and they won going away.
And San Diego State was losing in the first half to his college I've never heard of before.
Precisely. Now they go on the road. They'll go to a better, hostile. I don't know. San Diego State fans aren't bad, so they'll go to an environment, and they'll kind of figure out who they are defensively, and they'll see what McCoy will have to do. in that spot, and your team faces Boise State. And so, like, if Idaho's defensive line was a problem, shouldn't Boise State's be a problem? Let's see what the adjustments are, what Bedford's return availability is, all that stuff. So I think all of these opinions and feelings are fair. It's week one, though, and we love to just... We do this in the NFL. We're going to do it this week.
Yeah, we have blue ball takes, if man. They've been building all summer.
If the Jets beat the Niners next Monday, what are people going to say on Tuesday, right? it's going to be, oh my God, the Jets are back! Yeah. And that's what it's going to be. And it's like that every year, every time. And we always get fooled, or we always every know we year. Overreact.
Every year.
And so somehow both of our programs this week, you get a team that you've never beaten coming to your building after not feeling great. And then we get to go on the road to San Diego State and like, take on one of the better Mountain West teams and see what that's going to be.
This is all of us with our takes after week one because they've been building all summer.
Oh, that man.
Just been, you know, they've just been thinking about it. Just building.
Wanting. Ooh, might make your head blow off.
Well, and then if we win this week by convincing fashions, we're going to be like, we're good.
I told
what
you.
What do you think?
Oh, man. We didn't get to the scheduling note there. I do want to get to that in the final hour. It is interesting. John Mateer, does Washington State have the best quarterback in the Northwest?
Mateer, we got a new Minshew on our hands.
Five tutties, 11 completions. They put 70 on the board this weekend.
That was fun to watch.
Yes.
Well, let me say this. It was, but also the Portland State quarterback went down with an injury.
Yes. Risha Shea, is that his name?
Is it Risha Shea?
I thought it was doesn't it start with a C-H?
Cheshire Cat?
Cheshire?
Anyways, he's down on the field, and I looked at the score, and I wanted to tweet, but I didn't because I knew somebody would old takes expose me. Mm. I wanted to tweet, they shouldn't be allowed to play. This should not be allowed Portland State to go play at Washington State. This kid just died on the field.
This is why we should not.
And they're losing by 50 points.
Yeah. Well, I've ranted for weeks that I hate these opening games against FCS teams. And I was like, boy, I'm glad we played an FCS team this weekend. Because if we would have played anybody with a pulse, we probably lost.
Is Barnum happy?
I think he is. He's probably making a decent amount of money. You know, he's not going to get fired. They're not going to fire him. He's just, you know, he's doing
his
thing.
Is that a never get fired job?
I think so. Does Portland State have any expectations any year?
I don't know.
Since Mouse Davis? Like, I think there's no pressure there.
Well, there's now like 27 teams in the Big Sky, too. They keep adding them.
Yeah, massive conference.
So he's got to take the Washington State game and another one to fund the program.
Exactly. They got paid like $600K this weekend.
That paid the bills right there. You're good. That did.
There's your budget, man. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about John Mateer. The Huskies got their win late Saturday night. Not great first half, but similar to a lot of teams, pulled away in the second half.
I gave up. I got to be honest.
You pulled the plug.
The Pac-12 after dark stuff's largely gone away. Now, we've got some night games coming up here soon. Yeah, I said, you know what?
Weber State, not worth it.
They're going to handle Weber State. Yeah. I'm not concerned. Jonah Coleman's running all over them. I'm out. I will check. I'll check with you in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm kind of over the night game thing. I'm getting old.
We had Big 12 and Big 10 after dark this weekend, and it just didn't seem right. Just did not
seem right.
The
Arizona game was a much more entertaining watch.
Tutorial McMillan is a top, like that dude. Jeez. Holy hell.
We just give him the Biletnikoff now?
Holy hell, man. Of all-time misses for us in recruiting, that dude was committed to Oregon, man. God, I'm never going to forget that one.
But also, New Mexico was going back and forth with them for
Arizona's defense. Like, what are we doing here?
Fighting Brennan's?
So we got a lot to get to in the final hour. We'll do some fun college football with audio as well. Have you ever ranted in front of a Denny's? We'll play that for you. And if you call into Sports Talk Radio, sometimes your wife might not be happy. Bill Orem coming up at 8:15. It's a loaded final hour. It's a football Tuesday. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.